Malcolm Finlayson, Reel 5.
Which stations did you prefer in India?
Well, on the plains, Lahore. In the hills, had good times in Dagshai and Ranikot. But they were in the line of duty. The stations I really liked when I went on leave was Nainital, which is a marvelous place, and Simla. Simla is a recognized top holiday place, you know. I went up there for a football tournament, the Jaran tournament that was held in Simla. Unfortunately, we didn't win it the year I went there, but we have won the Jaran Cup. And we also won the IFA Shield in Bombay, went to Bombay for football. But Nainital and Simla, yes, up in the hills, beautiful, followed by Dagshai and Ranikot. And on the plains, as I said, Lahore.
Why did you prefer Lahore on the plains?
It's a beautiful city, Lahore, and the Shalimar Gardens was a well-liked part of Lahore. Beautiful gardens, Shalimar River flowing through. I used to go there and relax. Very nice. I think there's a poem about it, where the Shalimar is flowing or something by Omar Khayyam, was it? I don't know. One of the Indian poets, anyway.
Which station did you like least?
Least.
Was the one which you didn't really like very much?
Well, Janzi I didn't like very much.
Why was that?
Well, it was, I think the temperature, it used to go to 120, it was steadily 112, and it was a bit warm for comfort. There wasn't the facilities or amenities in Janzi that we'd had in Lahore. I suppose that's the reason I would say Janzi.
You've told me that whilst you were in barracks in India, there were plenty of these Indian servants around. How much did they get paid? Can you remember?
Oh yes, you paid your boot boy who cleaned all your equipment and what have you. You paid him 1 rupee a week, which was equivalent of 1 and 4 pence. The nappy, the barber, he used to come round and shave you every morning for a princely sum of 4 annas, again 4 pence. All the other wallahs, tea wallah or char wallah, fruit wallah, dud wallah, milk dud wallah. He used to buy from them, and some of the lads used to run up bills giving the wrong names in the wallah's book. And you used to always keep them in credit. You paid them so much, which ensured that the following week you'd get service again, you know. Bad payers, they used to, you know, take it out on the others, charge the others a bit more, I think. But you always kept them in credit, and you were always sure of them coming back. There's plenty of them around. Canteens were pretty good. The Babu there, Onkar Pershad, he was the regimental caterer. He was quite a good lad. And you could have anything you wanted in the canteen, in the way of sandwiches or rolls and what have you, you know, light snacks sort of thing. So it wasn't too bad that way. But It was a liberty, really, giving anybody 1 and 4 pence for a week's work. 4 pence for shaving you every morning in bed. Yeah, you often never used to wake up. You're shaved in your sleep.
How did the soldiers treat the servants?
Some of them treated them pretty rough. They were most unfair on them. Instead of giving them 1 and 4 pence, they gave them a shilling. Moan at them all the time, sort of thing. You know, you didn't do that to my satisfaction. Take that away and do it again, like, you know. They were very servile, the natives. They stood for it. And they didn't only do yours, of course. They had maybe 3 or 4 that they worked for. So if they got a rupee from each of them, they were fairly rich at the end of the week. Same with the Dobie Waller. You used to send your laundry, but they used to get it mixed up. You had Dobie marks on it, but you didn't always get your own stuff back, sort of thing, and they used to knock hell out of it because of the way they washed it. You know, they'd beat it on large stones, sort of thing. Yeah.
Were there any cases where soldiers struck servants?
Oh, they were in very serious trouble if they hit a native. If a native came with a complaint, it was thoroughly investigated and the soldier punished. Yeah. You weren't allowed to do that at all.
Did it happen?
Oh, quite a few times, I would think. Yes, yes, there was. But the soldier was disciplined. I mean, but I should think it might have happened and the boot boys or what have you never complained, you know. They took it for granted, sort of thing. You were the master, you know. He was the slave. Yeah, but never anything. No, you were in serious trouble if you struck a native.
You said that some of the clothing went astray. Was there any pinching that went on between
quite a lot, one soldier
and another?
Quite a lot, yes. You went on. I mean, everybody were ushered with the same things. And somebody lost something, so he nicked somebody else's. And the person he nicked it off pinched somebody else's. And there was quite a little bit of petty pilfering. The natives, I don't think, did much of it. There were times when something went missing and the boot boy was interrogated, but that was pretty rare for the ordinary natives to pinch. But loose wallahs, they were a different kettle of fish altogether. They used to steal, they used to come into the barracks and thieve anything that they could get their hands on, sort of thing, you know. And it has been known for a soldier to wake up and see a loose wallah at his bedside, but it would have been fatal for him to have made it known that he had seen them, you know, because they were vicious, and you just let them get away from your bed before you raise the alarm, sort of thing, you know. And then they were chased, of course, but seldom caught. They used to cover their bodies in cheetah fat so that the dogs wouldn't bark. The dogs were afraid of the cheetahs, and the smell of the cheetah fat was enough to frighten the dog from barking and arousing the barrack room, you know.
What does loose wallah mean?
Thief.
Did you just get them on the frontier or in other places?
Oh, no, loose wallahs are all over India, yeah. There was a loose wallahs market in Peshawar where it has been known for soldiers to go down and get their stuff back from it. and buy it back, you know. Of course, rifles, they were all securely chained up. You were never far from your weapon, you know. That you guarded with your life. Because rifles falling into the wrong hands was a bad thing.
Were there any instances you knew of anybody having a rifle stolen?
No, I can't recollect it, but some must have had their rifles stolen because these rifles were on sale in Peshawar. And they were bought up, of course, by Afridis and the other tribesmen.
Did the tribesmen on the frontier seem to be different in any way from the type of Indians you got elsewhere in India?
Oh, yes. The frontier tribesmen were a tribe apart. The normal Indians, civilians, were amenable to British rule, but up on the frontier, no, they didn't want any part of it. And they did their damnedest to use every opportunity of going out of Britain. There was a mad, a madman of the frontier who led them, I can't remember his name now. His name escapes me, but he was
The Fakir of Ypres?
No, not the Fakir of Ypres, no. Another bloke. It's gone.
It's all right, never mind. And so were the Pathans on the frontier sort of different in temperaments?
Yes, the Pathans were a proud race. The Pathans weren't any trouble in the time I was in India. It was prior to my going there that the Pathan and the British were at loggerheads on the frontier. I mean, now Shira, Khyber Pass area, all that. The Pathans were a warlike tribe, you know.
Did you ever feel uneasy when you were going about in India?
Not really, no. We mixed. We went, and in the cities you could go to different places. Some hotels wouldn't accept your custom. There were notices up, dogs and soldiers not allowed. I mean, dogs taking priority over the soldier. But
where did you see these notices?
Agra. I don't think either Kanpur or Lucknow, I don't know, but they did publish it, the fact that dogs and soldiers weren't acceptable sort of thing.
Was this the Indians who put this?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Hotel owners.
And did you make any Indian friends? Did you come across Indians apart from the servants and the bazaar wallahs?
Yes, you did at functions and parades and things, ceremonials. You met and spoke to, I don't say made friends with, but you met and spoke to all castes of, Indians.
These were Indian soldiers, were they?
Oh, no. Civilians invited to the ceremonies. Indian soldiers we got on well with. There was never any bother there. We always found them good lads. The Indian is a very nice chap. military-wise. Outside, I suppose they were afraid of their women being seduced or what have you. They never let you near their wives. I mean, I think that was one of the reasons that they kept apart.
So, did you ever go into the home of an Indian?
No, no. I've lived in YMCA hostels where Indians were part of the guests or holiday makers or what have you. And I always found them quite friendly and their habits quite clean and eating and what have you.
Didn't you say that whilst you were stationed at Jhansi Fort that the Indians used to come into the fort once a year?
Aye. Jhansi Fort was a little way out of Jhansi where you went on detachment. And once a year the native population were allowed in to worship at a shrine that was in Jhansi Fort. They were allowed to march through, well watched by the garrison, but never any trouble. It was they went there, they worshipped and went out. But outside Jhansi Fort, there was all sorts of freak animals and beggars. Horribly maimed with their begging bowls. And you used to give them a few annas. It didn't cost much for them to live, really.
What do you mean by freak animals?
Well, one in particular had a cow with six legs. It had its normal four legs and two more growing from its shoulder. You know, its hindquarters.
And these were
horrible
just
looking thing.
These were just put on show to collect money.
Oh yes, yeah. Of course, you had your snake charmers and what have you. They put on a show for you. You threw in a few coppers.
When you were in India, did you ever consider taking a job there?
No, I didn't, because I don't think I'd have liked to have stayed permanently in India. India was an experience in a lifetime sort of thing. I mean, I joined the army with the hope that I would travel, and I went to India. It was quite an experience that I enjoyed, but not a permanent home, no.
Did any of the soldiers
some of them married out there and stopped out there. They took vocational training courses and that were provided by the army authorities and stopped out there, but not many. The Indian Army, quite a few of the officers were seconded to the Indian Army and stopped out there. Of course, that still goes on. I think their British officers are still in foreign parts, you know, as members of a native regiment. The Gurkhas, for instance, they're still us, the Gurkhas. They've been over here recently. They visited my headquarters at Fort George. They come over to take part in the Edinburgh Tattoo. The Gurkhas are still looked upon, I think, still partly officered by British officers.
You said earlier how you made that friend, the Henderson, who worked on the railway. Did you come across any other British civilians in India in any other types of jobs, like police or civil servants or British shopkeepers or missionaries or anything of that kind?
Oh, I did come across British missionaries, yes, but they were few and far between. Civil servants and other British out there. No, they were out of my sort of... Well, these were the days of class. I mean, you were a soldier, and that was it. And you weren't all that welcome in higher-up civil servants' homes or what have you. You did meet them, but only at functions. I never made friends with anybody from the civil service. Henderson, he was on the Bombay Broad and Central Indian Railway and lived at Bandiki, and I used to go down there for a holiday. It was in Rajputana, which was a native state, and British soldiers weren't allowed there as soldiers. You went in civilian clothes. But apart from that, no, I never...
What about Anglo-Indians? Did the soldiers come into contact much with them?
Oh, yes, they came into contact more with Anglo-Indians than they did with Britishers or natives. The Anglo-Indians were they were a class on their own sort of thing. They were very friendly. Obviously half-caste, but with British names, which everybody swore they took from gravestones. But you could meet Anglo-Indians with Smith, Johns, Robertson or Brown sort of thing, and they never, God knows where they got the names from, like, you know. But they were quite a community, and they did invite you to their bits of do's and that, and they came to yours.
And did you go to their homes?
No, never went to their homes. Railway institutes, YMCA, these sort of places, but not their homes. There was never any call to go to their homes sort of thing.
Did any of the soldiers marry Anglo-Indians?
Oh, yeah, quite a few got married to half-castes, yes. And seemed quite happy. Some of them brought them home here to, or brought them back from India to Britain when they were discharged, and I know some of them who are still quite happily married to coloured women, but today I think it's becoming more prevalent now. You see white girls out with native, with coloureds here, and it's not a thing I like. I don't like that at all. But it's a sign of the times. I don't know why these girls go for them, but they seem to.
Did the army allow the soldiers to marry Anglo-Indians?
Yes, oh yes. They allowed you to sort of fraternise with them, and there was no sort of hard and fast rule that you couldn't marry one, not that I know of anyway. There were quite a few weddings out there.
But did they frown on it?
Oh, they didn't like it. The authorities didn't like it, no. No. And rightly so, I think.
Did you think it was an odd thing or a natural thing to be a British soldier in India?
Well, I took that for granted. It was part of the empire, and we went out there to protect the outposts of the empire. It was all part of a soldier's duty. I didn't think it was unnatural or anything like that. No, I thought we had every right to be there as as I say, it was part of the British Empire. They're in a sorry state now. They were much better off under British rule, and since the British left India, I think the country's gone well down. I mean, take these last two elections in India and Pakistan. I mean, look at the trouble that's been there just recently. Gandhi regime. I don't know whether that was a good thing or a bad thing for India, but they've thrown her out. She must have fallen out of favour somewhere. I think mainly for imprisoning all these opposition politicians and what have you. The main cause of her trouble.
Whilst you were a soldier in India, did you expect British rule to end?
No, not really. And it was a long time after I left India before it did. But no, I thought... I mean, India was a valuable member of the empire. We milked India, I think, to quite an extent. We got quite a lot of wealth from India. But I think they're a lot worse off now.
So you thought that British rule had gone forever, more or less, did you?
I did, yes. Yes, I didn't think that India would be... Because, you see, this isn't only India. There's lots of other parts of the dominions that have been given independence. And I can't see any of them that are doing any better out of it than they did when they were under British rule. And when they were under British rule, they were at least assured of some sort of protection against anything, really. The British soldier was out there to, call it, police the country, if you like. But I didn't think that, of course, nobody in these days, I don't think, visualized independence for India.